David Wellington, our guest, and we're going to take your phone calls this hour as we talk about drones. If you ever seen a drone, check in with us. I've seen the little toys, but not the real big ones. And then his other work was Chimera. Strange thing of a mixing of human and animal DNA. Okay, welcome back, David Wellington, with us. We'll get to your calls, too. Fascinating subject, David, but I think that you're always working on something. So what's your next project?
I'm actually working on a science fiction novel right now. It's about aliens, but specifically why we have not yet met aliens. Certainly plenty of people claim to have, but we haven't had any official contact with aliens on this planet yet. And I was kind of wondering why, you know, with so many possible species of life out there in the universe, why have they never contacted us? So that's what my next book is going to be about.
Do you make up your own hypothesis about this?
I did, yeah. But I think there's something that the scientists talk about, which is called the Great Filter. And this is a sort of hypothesis that maybe out there there was a lot of life, but it never got to the point where it could build a radio, say. So they couldn't contact us. And the reason why is they think that a lot of life forms either get wiped out in, you know, big planetary catastrophes like what happened to the dinosaurs, or they wipe themselves out. And this is one of the big questions, you know, will humanity survive long enough to be able to contact other alien species?
I think we probably will. Don't you?
I hope so. I really hope so. I would love to talk to an alien.
First question, what would you ask?
Oh, you put me on the spot, huh? First question I would ask is...
There's so many, too.
Yeah, no, now I'm thinking of 100 things. I'm thinking which one should be first.
I mean, how'd you get here? Do you believe in God? What's the Big Bang? All kinds of things.
I think the first one would be, can I get you a drink of water? And I'll tell you why. If you invite somebody into your home, the first thing you do is you offer them a drink, right?
That's right.
Now, we don't know if these aliens will drink beer. We don't know if they'll drink Coca-Cola.
But you know they're going to drink water.
If they're anything like us, they would probably want some water. And you know, after a long trip, what do you want first? You want a glass of water.
Let's go to the phones. We've got many. Bill is truck driving in Kentucky to get us started. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, hey, George, hey, David. I had a question about your research. I want to see if maybe you can add to or maybe take away some fears I have based on, you know, something I was looking into. When you look at this Cas9 or CRISPR gene editing, it really is promising as far as, you know, organ donation or, you know, medical procedures. It's really encouraging. But what I was concerned about is prion diseases. And, you know, that's a misfolded or a misshaped protein. Mad cow disease, for instance,
yep.
Or scrappy.
Very familiar.
And what really scared me about it, or because at first I wasn't scared at all. I was like, okay, you might get a protein disease. All right, big deal. No, that's a big deal because some of these protein infections are 100% fatal. There's very few things that are 100% fatal. And I was wondering, like, when we gene edit these host animals to produce human organs, could we become more susceptible to a prion disease?
Well, yes, we could. It's actually, but I don't know if that's the big fear. Now, I've done a lot of research on prions. I actually wrote a book about them. It's a fictional novel called Positive, and it's about a prion disease that basically turns people into zombies. Because that is definitely a direction that could go. Now, what I learned about prions and why I'm not too worried about them is that right now the only way to contract a prion disease is to eat, like physically ingest, the meat of another animal's brain or spinal column. Prion can only exist in the brain. So unless you're actually eating a lot of cow brains, which, believe it or not, is what caused mad cow disease, the big panic of that in England, you know, you're probably going to be okay. Now, with this kind of chimera technology, with the transgenics and so on, this is all typically done in a lab where you're just working with the DNA, which is different enough from the prions that it should be relatively safe. You can't rule anything out. When you're working with DNA, yes, you're definitely working with proteins being folded in novel ways. And yes, that can lead to new kinds of diseases, and prion diseases are exactly what happens there. But hopefully the scientists working in that lab will recognize that kind of thing and catch it before, say, it got into even a test animal.
What do you think of the Zika virus, David?
That scares me. The Zika virus scares me. I think this is something we've never really dealt with before on a nationwide or a global level. This is something that, right now you've got governments around the world telling people, don't get pregnant this year. Just don't. You can't stop people from getting pregnant. Everybody wants babies and everybody's going to have babies. But B, that's a terrifying thought that the government is telling you not to get pregnant. I don't like the government telling me what I can do with my health insurance. I really don't want them telling me whether I can get, well, I'm not going to get pregnant this year. I can guarantee you that. But it's such a scary thing. But it is such a horrible disease. The microcephaly that Zika causes, that's not something you can cure. It is not something you can really treat. If the baby survives, that baby is going to have severe, severe developmental difficulties their entire life. So anything we can do to slow or stop the spread of the Zika virus, I think we should absolutely be working on that.
Okay, let's go to Matt in Indianapolis, east of the Rockies. Hey, Matt, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my call. I think the question I have, probably everybody's interested in hearing your opinion on, is do we see the drones as the solution to the problem of the United States government firing on their own citizens and the breakdown that would happen in the chain of command if that order was given? And I'll take your thoughts off the air. Thanks.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, sure. The drones, they're very good at crowd control. Unfortunately, this is something that they're very useful for.
Sure.
I don't know that the government has a specific plan in mind to use drones against American citizens. Again,
I bet they have a blueprint. They've got to have a blueprint somewhere, David.
Yeah, they do. The government is very good at hypothetical situations. They are very good at coming up with Plan Bs. Right, it's part of their job. But it also means, if they needed to, boy. Yeah, even the smaller, the civilian-style drones, are so useful for police forces, say, who are trying to spy on activists and agitators in a crowd, the go after the ringleaders, right? And that's a little terrifying. I mean, I've been in a number of protests in my life. I've marched against various things, and I have to say, I don't want the police taking my picture from the air. I don't want them making a catalog of every time I held up a protest sign. That scares me. It definitely does.
I mean, can you imagine you go to your window from your house and there's a little drone outside just hovering, looking at you?
It'll happen. Amazon wants to deliver packages that way.
That's weird, too. How do you get a verification that you got it? They probably take a picture of you or something.
They take a picture of you. They might take your thumbprints with a biometric scanner.
Or a picture of where the package is, because a lot of times a UPS guy just drops it off and leaves.
Yeah, absolutely, they do. My phone, my smartphone that I'm talking to you on right now, it can read my thumbprint. You could have the drone bring the package. It holds out a little smartphone-sized thing. You put your thumb on there. And they say, okay, great, you got the right package, and the drone leaves.
And if you don't do it, it won't leave.
Could be. Or it'll take the package back at the very least.
George in St. Louis, welcome to the program. Go ahead, George.
Good morning. Good morning, George. Morning, David.
Hi.
I'm a statistician. I've also studied game theory, and I believe it's a matter of time before we achieve artificial intelligence, that computers actually do become sentient. And after that, the game's up. Do you remember a movie? It was called Colossus.
Sure, the Golden Project, yeah.
Yeah, and the computers, the Russians and the U.S. computers became sentient, and they threatened to launch missiles at each other and put humanity as slaves, you know, because they held the weapons, obviously. But I think it's a matter of time before. Well, for instance, do you remember the first computer programs for chess came out?
Oh, yeah. I used to have one of those.
Yeah. What happens is the very first move, there's a set of possibilities after that first move is made, and then there's a lesser amount of possibilities after the second move is made and so forth and so on. So some designer, programmer, design all of the possibilities for every counter move in that chess set. That's how the very first artificial intelligence, how it possibly could occur, just by knowing all the possibilities for all the situations. It's just fantastic. You know, the Terminator, same thing there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of time before we build soldiers that actually start thinking for themselves.
Go ahead, David.
Well, I think that the artificial intelligence it is a scary topic, and it's one that like even Stephen Hawking, right, probably the smartest guy on Earth, Elon Musk, the businessman, they have been talking about this, about the danger, and they call it an existential threat, as in this is something that threatens our very existence. It's a ways off, I think. What we really ought to be worried about right now is what they actually call narrow artificial intelligence. And that is not necessarily a machine that can think for itself, but a machine that is so smart and so fast that it can make decisions faster than a human being. And that is very useful if you're trying to run the stock market, if you're trying to beat somebody at a game of chess, right. But it's also very dangerous if that machine starts making those decisions faster than a human being can, and starts making decisions that are contrary to what we want. Mm-hmm. Now, there are businesses across the country who are building these things right now, businesses that need to, say, find the quickest route to deliver a package, or they need to know what territories their salespeople are best going to be in. There are things called predictive algorithms that even the police use to know where crimes are likely to happen. These things, this is where we let the computers start making the decisions for us, because the computers are more efficient and they are more capable sometimes than we are. And that is a real bad slippery slope. Once you start letting the computers make the decisions, you've given up your own freedom and your own freedoms to choose.
What mind would want a computer to do that?
One that can make money off of it. Uh-huh.
The
stock market is the best example. Almost the entire stock market now is being done by computers. The stock market moves far too fast for any human being to track. These trades are made in things are bought and sold in microseconds.
I mean, they can shut the computers down, and they've done this. If trading starts really sinking and they panic, they just cut it off. Everything stops.
Yeah, there was a day when, I'm trying to remember the details, but there was a day when they were going to delay the stock market opening by 2 seconds, and the computers actually started trading before the 2 seconds were up, because they were moving so fast that, and just outpacing any human being, that even before a human being could press the button, the computers were already trading. And they had to shut down the stock market to figure out how that happened and how to make sure it doesn't happen again. Because if those computers start trading and we can't stop them, that could be the end of the economy as we know it.
There'll be a little computer robotic investment club.
Yeah.
and they'll all be talking about how they made this and that. Who knows? Who knows how smart they can get?
Yep.
So,
yeah,
go ahead.
Okay, I was going to say that one of the real dangers that we talk about when we talk about artificial intelligence is you make a computer that can actually improve itself. Now, you give the computer the ability, you know, you say to the computer, here's a problem for you to solve. How can I make you smarter? The computer can find a way to make itself smarter,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, it makes itself a little bit smarter after that, and a little bit smarter after that, and a little bit smarter after that. This is they call it evolutionary algorithms. This is a way for a computer to become theoretically infinitely intelligent on its own with no help from a human being. And at that point, you know, what does that computer see when it looks at us? It sees an animal in a zoo, I think, is the best we could hope for.
Do you think we've gone too far with technology?
You know, I think that the great thing about technology is that for every problem it creates, it can also create a solution. Now, that doesn't mean that technology is going to solve all of our problems tomorrow. And, you know, certainly I think that, you know, we've got worries about global warming. We've got worries about food crises. We've got worries about running out of energy and so on. And technology is not going to dig us out of that hole immediately. Just as these worries about computers, about artificial intelligence, about robots, I think that we're going to see some hard times for a while. I don't know exactly what that's going to mean. It might just mean higher unemployment. It could mean, you know, economic problems. But eventually, some technology will come along that can help us get out of that hole. It's up to us to make the right choices, of course, to use those technologies wisely.
See, Sports Authority came out today, David, and said they may close all their 400-plus stores. To me, this is a sign of the times of technology. I think Amazon.com and Internet stores have shut down some of these bricks-and-mortar stores.
No question about it. Yeah, that's exactly what happened there. And you're going to see more of that. You're going to see a lot more of that. When robots are doing every manufacturing job, you know, when they are picking all the produce, when they are washing every car and they are driving every truck, you know, what are we going to see in terms of unemployment? This is a huge problem just waiting to happen. So many people in this country, around the world, don't have a master's degree or whatever it takes to get an executive job, right? And all of those people are going to be out of work sooner than they want to be, believe me. You know, we will have to retrain everybody. We will have to really fund education better than we are right now, find better ways to educate people. But in the short term, we're definitely going to look at a much higher rate of unemployment.
All right, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you, David, as we talk about drones, chimeras, his latest book, The Cyclops Initiative. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, Craig Kula joins us to talk about events that are happening all over this planet, and then our open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Our final segment with David Wellington, author of The Cyclops Initiative. Where do you get the book, David?
You can get The Cyclops Initiative anywhere you buy books. It should still be in bookstores. You can find it online. It is available as an ebook and an audiobook.
Okay, good enough. Let's go now to PJ in Western Washington to get us started here. Go ahead, PJ.
So this is a fascinating subject.
It is, indeed.
One of the things that I was thinking about when you were talking about snipers, you know, essentially a robot sniper, aerial sniper, is that the difference between a robot and a person operating a drone is that the person operating a drone has a conscience, and, you know, obviously a robot would not. And then the other issue is that I guess the concern would be tasking a robot, like if you have facial recognition software or something like that, well, those are prone to mistakes.
Oh, they sure are.
I have multiple children, and oftentimes, you know, Facebook has facial recognition software, and it keeps confusing my children with my ex-wife and, you know, things like that. So it's kind of nerve-wracking to think that, yeah, we can just put a gun on wings and start shooting at people. It's a frightening subject. It's very reminiscent of the recent Battlestar Galactica series, though, with these sentient robots that decide they're going to take over.
Right, right. Yeah, I think the military rationale for this is that there are some places the military doesn't want anybody to go. Say you have a military base and you want to provide security for that military base. If someone is creeping up on that base in the middle of the night, they want to shoot them. And they don't particularly care, you know, what that person looks like. Obviously, there would have to be safeguards in place, and obviously there would be overrides, and there'd be somebody on a computer somewhere who could turn this thing off. You know, I think that's pretty crucial to a system like this. But the thing is, we're building towards a future where there won't be somebody in that position, where there won't, you know, where they will say, you know what, the robot is making good enough decisions, good enough, so let's just let the robot do its work.
What do you think of Isaac Asimov's rules, the three laws of robotics?
I think they're fantastic. I know for a fact that we're not using them. We've already built robots that can violate all of those laws.
Let me read the laws just so people will know. Then we'll react to it, okay?
Okay, so the first law is...
A robot may not injure a human being or, through inaction, allow a human being to come to harm.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to happen if they're built for warfare, right?
You know, even the self-driving cars don't follow that one.
Nope. A robot, number two, a robot must obey the orders given it by the human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. Now, that makes it sound like the robot knows what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, and that law assumes that any human being can give an order to a robot. And military robots obviously only take orders from their commanding officers.
And number three, a robot must protect its own existence as long as its such protection does not conflict with the first or second laws. So there you have it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think these laws of robotics are going to hold water in the future, or even now, as you say.
Yeah, nobody's putting them into practice. That third law, let's talk about that. A robot can't allow itself to be harmed. We have missiles right now. We have bombs that are smarter than the computer I had growing up as a kid. You know, we've got robotic bombs that can find a target and go straight for that target and swerve if they need to follow that target. That bomb is going to blow itself up. It is not protecting itself, right? That second law, the robots don't have to take orders from anybody except their programmers. And that first law about not harming a human being, like I said, the self-driving cars, there's a hypothetical situation, right? A self-driving car is about to go through an intersection when a five-year-old girl runs through the intersection. The car knows they can't stop in time. So what is it going to do? It's going to swerve to miss the girl,
mm-hmm.
even if that means killing all the people inside the car.
Right.
That robot has to make that decision without any human oversight. No human being is telling that car who you kill, who do you save.
I would guess most humans would swerve too.
I would hope so. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that for the rest of their lives, those people, the person who was driving that car, would wonder if they made the right choice, or they would, you know, regret what they did, or maybe they would be proud they made the right choice. The self-driving car will never feel any of those things.
Kick themselves forever, wouldn't they?
Yep.
Back to the phones. Ryan in Vancouver, Washington. Welcome to the program, Ryan.
Yeah, I'll keep this quick. Yeah, I don't think HAL 9000 and 2001 A Space Odyssey went by those three laws.
No.
I was just going to ask you, from a Star Trek The Next Generation, do you think we're ever going to potentially have, like, Data, he was a android that actually advanced, but he always made the right decision But I was just wondering, do you think we'll ever get to that point potentially?
Oh, I really hope so. I honestly do. I hope that we do eventually build an artificial intelligence that is moral, that, you know, cares about us. I think that that would just be such an incredible thing for the human race to have, you know, another life form. Let's call it that. Let's call it another life form that we can talk to, that we can work with, and who likes us. That is absolutely key. If we're going to build these artificial intelligences, we must teach them to like us.
You ever see the day where a robot runs for president?
Sure. You know,
and gets elected.
Artificial intelligence, yeah. Yeah, not your robot vacuum cleaner, no. But say a robot that can think for itself, that can make decisions as well as a human being can, and that has compassion. I think that you'd have to have compassion to allow that to happen.
And we've got a first-time caller, Mike from Salt Lake City, and happens to be a drone operator. Hey, Mike, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, George. It's an honor, and I've always listened to you whenever I'm driving home at night. I actually work as a defense contractor for a company called L3, and I'm also I kind of started my own little company doing robotics, just a little mom and pop out of the garage, and I go to such events like the Maker Faire and Spark Fun, where they have the Autonomous Vehicle Challenge, and I have a little website. If you go to Facebook, you can see my little drones I've flown around in the underwater submarine. It's called robotrek.net, but it's on my Facebook. But one of the questions I had, I'm trying to find out, you know, like, what's your thoughts on just a regular Joe like me going professional? For instance, I'm a math and science guy at Weber State, and I wanted to incorporate that into the robotics, since I do electronics and whatnot. I wanted to get your thoughts on where you think that the drones. I got a lot of friends who fly drones, and they don't like calling it that. It doesn't really bother me, but what's your thoughts on the future for just the commercial and those small mom and pop shop type of guys?
Oh, I think there's a lot of potential there.
I do too.
You know, there are so many applications for these things that we haven't even thought about yet. You mentioned like underwater drones. That's awesome. Underwater drones are great. They can do things underwater that no human being can do, right? They can go down there and do welding on the bottom of a ship to keep it from sinking. They can, you know, build things underwater in depths and pressures where we can't go. They can go and explore. They can do science underwater. That's an amazing idea, you know, to build a robot that can do those sort of things. And I think that even at the mom and pop level, even at the hobbyist level, you know, with the like the Arduino circuit boards and things, you can build a robot in your garage that could do something incredible. It could, you know, go to space, like on a balloon, and take pictures of the Earth, or it could, you know, solve some problem I can't even think of. Find a new way to clean out oil pipelines. They've got robots for that now. You know, yes, absolutely. I think some of the best robots, some of the best exciting prospects for robots are going to come from some guy in his garage, some woman in her garage.
That's,
who is just tinkering.
That's where Apple Computer came from.
Absolutely. And Hewlett Packard and almost every one of the big IT companies. Absolutely.
All right, Mike, good luck to yourself. Sounds like a cool little business, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does.
We've got Sean in Dayton, Ohio now. Welcome to the program, Sean. Go ahead.
Hey, George. It's been a while since I've talked to you. It was 2009. This is the 10th time I called.
Oh, my God. It has been a while.
Yeah, it has. I heard you guys talk something about the Zika virus. And I think they're just they're telling people, you know, not to procreate. It's just kind of using the media as an outlet to, you know, because they're saying, you know, the controlled population growth is one of the outlets they're using, you know. And I was wanting to talk about that. And then I hear them talking about robots. So I thought you said something about Zika, and then I hear about robots.
Mm-hmm.
I was right past Air Force Base. I wonder if there's any research going on there with robotics, you know, with any, you know, mechanical engineers or the...
I think most of the research, Sean, is being done at the private sector. Don't you think, David?
it's private companies, a lot of them are getting grants from the military.
Exactly.
Definitely a lot of the money is coming from the military, but the real work is being done mostly by private sector companies.
Is China ahead of us in the robotics?
Nope, not yet. They're definitely working on it. They definitely want to be. But right now, they're actually very much afraid of our drones, of our Predator drones, our Reaper drones, our Global Hawks. The Navy is building a lot of drones because right now they're talking about how do we respond to threats from China. And so that's one area where we're still ahead of the pack. But this is one of those things. It's like for a while we were the only country in the world that had the nuclear bomb. Well, but then the Soviets got it in 1949, whenever it was, and suddenly it was a whole new ballgame. So for right now, we are ahead of leading China in this, but I don't think that's going to last very long.
Next up, Tom in Riverside, California. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Hey, George. I'd like to ask your guest about the quality of life, you know, really the psychological effect of all this on the American people. It really should be controlled by the politicians, I mean through the people. The people aren't standing up anymore. They're not standing up for their privacy the phone calls being monitored. You're being isolated, basically. And when your car is taken away from you, you've got the health care invading your privacy, which was private between you and your doctor before. Now it's been put on computers so it can be accessed from anywhere, and nothing secure on the computer. I think that it's out of control. If it's used smart, it's okay. It's very beneficial. But if there aren't safeguards put into all that, do you really even want it? Do you want a car that's controlled by the government, phone communications that are monitored and no privacy, and a health care that, people know your ailments, your health, that you could be eliminated and nobody would even know. I mean, you know, but we're talking about a government that's through this program that's people suggest that, and it's being came out recently that the Saudi government knew about this, and our government was involved in bringing those buildings down. Our government was involved in killing the president, Kennedy, and many other things. So do you really want this that deep into your lives? I don't. So I'll take your...
And we've got a minute left. And I don't think government was involved in like the Kennedy assassination. There were people within government who were involved. There's no doubt about that. I don't think governments per se just do that. But be that as it may, we don't want government involved in our lives, David.
Well, we don't have a choice. In some ways, the government is definitely going to be part of our lives. In terms of, you know, it's the government that makes decisions about what wars we fight and how we fight those wars. I'm talking a lot about military robots tonight, and this is something that we're not going to have a lot of individual say in. We can pick our president. But it's the president who chooses when a drone fires a missile. We don't get any kind of oversight on that, and we will never know most of the times that the president pushed that button.
That is so true. David, thanks for being on the program. Fascinating. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Donna Walker, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burleson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.